Hello, you amazing people out there. Welcome to the Amazing Action Comics podcast, where we are all about independent comics. I'm one of your hosts, Angel, with John Pepe.
How's it going, Angel?
Well, you already know how's it going. We have our pre-chat every time before we start this podcast, so you know how it's going. Holy crap.
Yes, it is. But that is my thing now.
That is your thing now, yes. Well, it's funny. Well, we've got to keep everybody in the loop. So for those of you guys that don't know, you know, we have this podcast every – it is Friday now, right? Because we moved from Thursdays. Every Friday now at 9 o'clock in the morning is where we moved it to, because we thought it'd be convenient for both John before he goes to work on a Friday and me when I get out of work at 6:30 in the morning. And holy fuck. There's like, I don't know. I feel like I just, you know, had a binge all night and just woke up just to freaking have a quickie and then go back to bed.
It is not convenient for either of us.
Because
I'm like we gotta get this done so I can get to work. Like,
dude, but when you're passionate about something, you get your ass up and you fucking do it.
Exactly.
All right. With that being said, guys, welcome to another episode of the Indie Comic Review. This is where John and I look through the shelves of new books for each week from the indie scene, and then see what tickles our fancies, and then give you our 2 cents so that you can go out there and support the indie community. This week we have, I think, 3 books, because we both read 1 book together.
Cool.
And this is for the week of October 25th in the year of our Lord, 2023. Now, normally we would have some news, but this week has been quiet, so nothing on the indie comic front there. So I think we're going to jump right into it. So let's start with the book that we both read, if you want to go ahead and jump in on that one.
Yeah, sure. So this is from Image. It is called Edenwood. I'm assuming that's the one we both read. And it is written and illustrated by Tony S. Daniel, colored by J. David Ramos, lettered by Nathan Kemp, and edited by Kel Simons. And with a special thanks to Anna, whoever Anna may be. Thank you, Anna. So Tony Daniel, you know, this guy has been in the business for a while now. He has definitely become a very accomplished writer and artist. He did, you know, a bunch of stuff for Image, did some stuff for DC, most notably worked on Batman during the Grant Morrison era, with Dick Grayson specifically as Robin is one of the things that he worked on, and also illustrated the Batman RIP arc with Grant Morrison. Mm-hmm. And then for the last couple years has been doing his own creator-owned stuff with Image. Image has Nocterra is the big one that he has right now.
Yeah, well, he's doing the art for Scott's writing, Scott Snyder.
Scott Snyder and Tony Daniel on Nocterra. That's right, there's an ad on the back there. And so this is his solo-ish effort, Edenwood, which was really neat. It has all the earmark.
When you use the word neat, look out, people.
So it has all the earmarks of Tony Daniel's art, like very intricate, very detailed art, great looking characters. Nobody has a natural hair color, and whenever he does something, it is really cool. And what's kind of neat is that it does have like this setup. It's like a world that's familiar, but then there's certain like references to like what's going on in this greater world. And so it is definitely a very different reality than what we are experiencing. And it's definitely like there's some sort of big war going on. And then there's like the segment of the population just tries to exist as if nothing's going on until like these kids are dragged into this war or anything. And then there's like, I guess there's some of these enchanted woods or something that's going on in here. And, you know, you follow this one guy, Ryan, who kind of winds up in these woods to search for his girlfriend, and something terrible, I think, happens to her. And then he encounters this guy with this really cool sort of skull mask and this sort of like buccaneer type outfit with swords and stuff like that. And then there's like a flash forward to some time later, and you kind of get a little more details on the story that Ryan has now displaced this guy, and that some of the girl's brother is now older and sort of in charge, I guess, of some sort of regiment there. and they actually encounter each other at the end. So that kind of is your springboard for this. So I say neat, Angel, because again, as from my description, there's a lot going on, and a lot of it isn't very clear because it is an opening chapter. But boy, what a beautiful looking book. Again, I've always loved Tony Daniels' art. He does not skimp on the details on this one. So very, I think, very high concept, very nice looking book, and I really do want to see where this goes. I just don't know if I have a firm grasp on everything that's going on right now.
Yeah, there is a lot, and it's like you have a gist of it, but I mean, it's supposed to take place within the U.S. scope, right? And Edenwood is this area that's kind of like roped off where demons are kind of like held in.
Right.
But Edenwood is expanding, and it's somewhere in sort of like the Minneapolis, Milwaukee kind of region.
Yeah.
And so there's demons and witches that are having this battle. I guess there's people that are caught in between. I felt the same way too. There's a lot going on. It's a 5-issue miniseries, so I'm pretty sure that we're going to get more along the way.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I was just caught up in the art because I really like Tony Daniels' art. And you know the it wasn't 100% clear what was going on, and we had a time jump of 3 years in the book. And I think the surprise at the end was supposed to be like a really shocking surprise. But I wasn't shocked or surprised. We've been reading this long enough to kind of figure out people don't really die. They just disappear. And unless you see them like head chopped off and fucking dead,
right,
then, you know, they're going to come back.
And even in this, that's not necessarily a death, right? Because there is a character's head gets chopped off, yet they're still talking.
Yeah. So I think the hard thing for me when you have like books that are dealing with demons and witches and the pacing is really fast is that there isn't any time to ingest character development. And when there isn't anything to invest in, as far as like a character, whether their situation or anything that you can relate to, that it just becomes something that you're just reading. And I think that's what was missing for me. It's sort of like that attachment to any of the character or a reason to continue with the book. Even though it's a beautiful looking book, and nothing against Tony Daniel, because I really, really enjoy him. And I love him on Octera. But one of the things that I really enjoy about Octera is the story behind it. I mean, Scott's been writing for a while. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his first issues of any book that he writes is really meaty. This kind of had that as well. But I think some of the ideas were just really just like either not extremely clear or they just went over my head. And it's possible that it went over my head because, I can be dense sometimes. If you like demons and witches and that sort of stuff, and you like Tony Daniel, this would be definitely worth a pickup. And then probably, I mean, it's 5 issues, so I might stay invested enough to see how it finishes off.
Yeah, as a 5-issue, that seems like it'll be a nice, tight narrative. And that's the thing, you can either go one of two ways with a first issue, right? You could either have a very dense, exposition-heavy, or even like, you know, like a opening crawl, like a Star Wars type, this is what's going on here, you know, sort of like just a page of okay, this is what's happening. Or you could do the way that Tony does here, where it's just, you're just thrust into a situation where these characters are kind of, they exist in this world, they are having casual conversations, and then the details sort of creep in during those conversations. So you get sort of bits and pieces of the background as you go.
Yeah.
So I think it was intentional to kind of be a little light on some of the details, just to kind of, again, put you in there. And I think as we go, we're going to get more and more of a sense of the world. But you're absolutely right. The draw here is Tony Daniels' art. The character that looks so cool. Mm-hmm. He's kind of like this like Captain Harlock manga anime type guy with like this like pirate jacket, buccaneer action going on, the skull mask and the sword. Really visually a really cool looking character though.
Yeah.
And the art really is just, it really pops with a lot of the details that he puts in.
Yeah. And, you know, I agree with you. You could be really vague with the details and kind of like, what the hell's going on kind of here, if there was something that kind of lured you in.
Yeah.
So, for example, we read Sacrifices together.
Right.
And that was a fucking book that was open-ended in the first issue. It was like, what the fuck is going on? And that's an introduction of a lot of characters. But there were these moments within those, you know, 22 pages of holy crap, I feel for this particular character going through this particular situation. And then on top of the situation that character's going through, he's going to go ahead and get freaking, he's going to be given up by his family as a sacrifice, yeah. Even though he's being held in the barn to be the sacrifice and stuff like that. So there was these little moments in Sacrificers that kind of like made you feel for that particular character, even though there was things were unknown. In this particular storyline, I didn't find any moment like that. But I think because there was a lot of information coming from a lot of different angles, and trying to get a lot of it within the 22 pages that we have.
Yeah, you're right. Very, very pretty. A lot going on. But yeah, you didn't feel emotionally invested right from the gate like you did in something like Sacrifices. Funny note about this book, too, is I don't know if you noticed, this book is about a month late.
Oh, is it?
Because there's the ad for issue two, where it's in the back where it says on sale October 25th, which was actually the day that issue one came out.
That's
so
funny.
So it's like, so my note, I guess, to publishers, I know these things go into production and stuff really well in advance, but boy, if you're running late, you might want to just do something editing on the ads.
Get your shit together. Yeah, and then the flip side of that, the only thing that I could think of that probably would have made this a little bit digestible for me is you got the map of Edenwood and then, you know, the Minneapolis, Milwaukee area. Maybe sort of like, I don't know, a little bit more in regards to like maybe the regiment, I don't know, commands or whatever type of either witches or demons kind of thing. I don't know. It was just missing something for me. I can't put my finger on it. Beautiful looking book. Yeah. I'm definitely going to give it another issue to see if there's more story in there that I can follow along. But we'll see what happens.
Cool.
Check it out. Edenwood from Image Comics, guys. All right. So I guess I'll move on. I'll move on.
All right.
I'll do the next one. All right. So this one is called Drive Like Hell. This is from Dark Horse Comics. I'm going to butcher the names like crazy. So this is written by Rich. I'm going to say Doek. It's D-O-U-E-K. Illustrated by Alex Cormick and lettered by Hassan Otsmani El Haou. We've had him before.
He letters everything.
He does letter everything.
Because he gets that. Okay, go ahead.
All right, so I picked this up because I was flipping through the pages and I kind of like dug the art and I was like, oh, you know what? This is for some reason I got a vibe of like a demon car and I wasn't too off. It is a demon car. This is like a demon that owns this car that is not possessed, but it's a demon car, so it's Christine come alive in this particular thing. So with that being said, yeah, I did read it. I think for me this week, the issue I had with these number one issues was just pacing. The pacing was kind of like just all over the place. And it's when you have a book that has like 2 weeks ago and then it has like two pages, six panels describing what happened 2 weeks ago and then comes to the present and there isn't any real connection between what happened 2 weeks ago that was going on in the present, it bothers me. Mm-hmm. Again, that might be something that just went over my head. But basically what you have is sort of like this demon that is trying to pick something up from this guy. I'm at a bar and you have this guy that's outside the bar that's looking at this car that he finds super cool. Guess what he does? He robs it, and he takes the car so that he can use it for a bank robbery that his girlfriend, I guess, has set up a heist. And then so the demon finds out that the car was taken, blah, blah, blah. As they're making their getaway and the girlfriend's running towards the car with money flying all over the place, you got bang, 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 bang. She jumps into the car. Demon ends up shooting her in the head, in the car. She's dead. But like 2 minutes later, guy turns, he's talking to her, he's like screaming at her, what do I do now? Even though she's dead, he knows that she's dead. She responds back because she's not dead. So I think for some reason, the car itself animated her body and is talking through her body and stuff like that. And then we just basically have sort of this chase at the end where the police cars turn into like these demon police cars and... Yeah, that's where we're at. It was weird. It's kind of cool, but I don't know. The pacing for me was a little off, so it just really moved. It moved really quickly, and we don't have enough background on these characters sort of like, and his demon and his motives and stuff like that. So for me, this one was sort of like a miss, even though, I mean, the art's great. I think the story itself, the concept of the story, I think is pretty cool as well. There's just nothing for me vested in regards to, you know, what's going to happen next. It's one of those where do you really care if you're reading 11 books this week kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But if you like sort of like that Christine / demon type of, you know, Fast and Furious kind of all wrapped up into one, then this would be for you. I mean, I really like the cover too, because the cover has just like a sort of like this Trans Am. It looks almost like a kit from Knight Rider.
Mm.
With a just like leaping and a whole bunch of like police cars piled up underneath it. It's cool as hell, as far as the art's concerned. But yeah, check it out if you like that stuff. Drive Like Hell, from Dark Horse Comics.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right.
And so your last one
is from Boom Studios, and it is called Slow Burn. It is written by Ollie Masters, illustrated by Pier Luigi Minotti, colored by Alessandro Santoro, lettered by Hassan Atsmani Alahu.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is. Oh, dude, he does everything. Every week we have at least one book from him. This week we have two. Designed by Madison Goyette, edited by John Moisen, and executive editor Eric Harburn. Now, this also has a car, doesn't have a demon, but it does have a woman who snorts cocaine and drives this car like she's a demon.
Oh my God, that sounds better.
So you would probably have, when you talk about pacing, you might have a problem with this one. Because, so first and foremost, it is, as far as its narrative pacing, it is not a slow burn. It kind of gets you, not in the middle of the action, but right after a major sort of action beat. And they do a really neat trick on the first couple of pages where you have your basic 9-panel grid, right? And your first panel is the letter S, and then an image. And then your third, you know, the second panel, the third panel is the letter L. So that you alternate panels with the title. And what you're getting in the images are sort of your setup. You have characters right where they are in the present, but then you have these flashback images to the major action that happened just before you kind of enter into the story with these folks. And so at first I was like, okay, that's going to be a little confusing, you know, trying to piece this together. But they, Ollie Masters and Pier Luigi Minotti, do a really good job of getting you up to speed really quickly on this major action that happened prior. Very much reminds me of Reservoir Dogs, right? Where you kind of pick up a Reservoir Dogs right after the robbery and you see one guy has been shot and you're like, what, how did this happen? And then eventually you get that information. This does the same thing. Something has happened. One of the guys is shot and you start to get those pieces built in for you as you basically have three characters on the run. A woman, Roxanne, her boyfriend, and then this guy's grandfather. And it all has to do sort of with them having a plan to break the grandfather out, because the grandfather, if I'm remembering correctly, is sort of in like an assisted living kind of thing. And they basically, you know, they're not good people, right? And so I don't want to give away too much, but basically there's this whole thing about her father is sort of a professional thief, and he stole something that she then stole from him. Mm. And so she's kind of on the run from her own father, and again with her boyfriend as well as his grandfather, who's also a big piece of this. I don't want to get, like I said, I don't want to give away too much, but like you find out very early on in this first issue exactly what happened, why her boyfriend got shot, who shot her. It was a really good revelation. It was really cool. So basically I really dug this. The art reminded me a lot of is it Alex Maleev, who did the early Alias stuff with Marvel Max Comics, with Bendis. So it's very much that kind of an art style, except he doesn't rely so much on the heavy repeated panel imagery. that Alex Maleev would do in that series. So there's definitely some good work going on here. And again, I like stories where you kind of are following unsavory characters that actually have some good qualities, right? Mm. So it kind of keeps you conflicted as an audience. And that's kind of exactly what we have here. Like, yeah, like I wouldn't hang out with these people, but I kind of want to see what their journey is and what's going to happen to them during this whole sort of heist that they have gotten themselves in the middle of, and how Adele's kind of gone to shit, where you enter in right after it's gone to shit and you're like, it just keeps getting worse for these people. So this is another 5-issue miniseries. Again, the title Slow Burn usually details like, okay, this is a slow burn narrative, and you know, by issue 4 you're going to get all that information. But this doesn't do this. This kicks into high gear pretty much right from the beginning, and I was very engaged and very interested in what was going on, and it was a nice refresher, contemporary story, not some sort of, you know, post-apocalyptic dystopian future, very real world, very grounded. As far as I could tell, there's absolutely nothing supernatural going on here. Mm. So if you really like a crime noir with, you know, sympathetic but really messed up characters, with like a nice sort of mystery as to what exactly is going on as it is unveiled and revealed to you, I highly recommend this. Slow Burn from Boom. Really a nice, quiet little surprise this week.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I just it bothers me with their damn freaking
the codes
on the back.
And no, the not codes. The $4.99. Oh, right there. Yes.
The barcode.
Yes.
It's still the same.
Yep. 01011. Whereas most everybody will do like 001111. Yeah, because you know they have high hopes. They think that something's going to run for 300 issues or 100 issues. Slow Burn, they keep it a little more real there.
No, I got to reach out to somebody and find out what's going on.
They're like there. It's like they're the only ones.
Oh,
they're the only ones.
Wait. So there is a bit of news. Okay, so we're going to work backwards today.
Breaking news.
Breaking news. All right. So the dream that I thought I had wasn't a dream; it was reality. So I don't know if I mentioned it last week, but yeah, Dynamite has got the license to Thundercats.
Yes, we had we weren't sure about this when we talked about it a couple weeks ago.
Right,
but yes.
But there was an ad for it, so I said, "Holy shit!" So February of 2024, because that has nothing to do with the writer's strike or the actor's strike.
Right,
we should get it unless it's delayed for any reason. But then that means something's gonna happen down the road if we're gonna get, you know, the comic. So we're either gonna get a new toy line, or we're gonna get another animated series.
Oh,
so
interesting.
That's my thing. That's my prediction.
But Declan Shelby is writing and illustrating, or is he just?
You know what? That's a good question.
Yeah.
But if he's doing both, then that'd be freaking great.
I like him, and I like to see what he does with this. Just as much, you know, just it's like a Daniel Warren Johnson situation. Really like Daniel Warren Johnson. I was really curious to see what he was going to do with Transformers, and boy, that was good.
It was good. Yeah. I just I don't know. I would like a grown up Thundercats. Kind of like just raw fucking Lionel just ripping somebody's throat out kind of thing.
Yeah, there was the what was it, like 20 years ago, was it Image that was doing, or Wildstorm that was doing a couple Thundercats miniseries, and they went a little too far, I think, in like the dark direction with the second miniseries.
Oh,
and
really?
A lot of people did not respond well to it.
Check it out. It was Wildstorm because I think I had those issues.
Yeah. So give them a reread.
Check it out. Yeah.
I remember I remember the first miniseries being very good, fairly traditional, but you know, more modern. And then, I think the second miniseries really went off the rails.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, it's Dynamite, so I mean, it can't go too off the rails. They just have sexy chicks.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. All right, yeah. So look out for that. I'm looking forward to that. Just like I was excited for this whole, you know, Energon-verse and Transformers. And I think what's coming out soon. Is it Cobra or is it Duke?
So it'll be a Duke miniseries and a Cobra Commander miniseries, I think, coming out almost concurrently before they do a G.I. Joe set in that universe. But they are bringing G.I. Joe back with issue 301 written by Larry Hama. So they're still going to actually have the same G.I. Joe universe that's been running since 1982. And I think that that is going to be separate from this Energon universe with this new stuff. Or
but it's going to be under the Image banner?
It's still going to be under Image. It's all under the Image Skybound.
No longer IDW. Well, IDW hasn't had it, but yeah, because that's where it ended, right?
They let the license lapse. IDW's last issue was 300, again, picking up from the original Marvel numbering from 1982.
Was Larry Hama still writing up to them?
Yes, Larry Hama has pretty much written all the G.I. Joes from 1 to 300, I believe.
That
are numbered in that sequence. Because there has been the G.I. Joe, like Josh Blaylock was writing, that was a separate numbering, right? So you want to be a Larry Hama G.I. Joe completist. I believe 1 through 300 now, 301 and going, are all Larry Hama since 1982. And again, I don't know if I think this is going to be a separate universe from the Energon universe, or if they're going to find some clever way to connect them, the traditional G.I. Joe with the Energon universe, we'll see.
But it's still going to be continuing from that original series.
As far as I know, 301 will be picking up from 300 that IDW had. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Did he draw any of them?
He is an illustrator, but I don't know if he's ever illustrated a full issue of G.I. Joe.
He definitely had to do some covers.
He's done some illustrations along the road, but I don't know if he's actually done. And that's the thing, is I think he's more of like a sketch artist and not a sequential artist.
Gotcha.
But I know, look, Larry Hama is amazing. He is a very good artist. He's a great writer. He's an actor. He was on like some episodes of MASH back in the day.
Oh, wow.
I mean, like this guy's done everything. And another thing, I guess, that Image Skybound is doing, they're doing a facsimile reprint of G.I. Joe number 1 from 1982.
Wow.
But the director's cut, because apparently there were some editorial decisions made that Larry Hama didn't agree with back then on that first issue.
Mm.
So he's fixing the dialogue to how he wanted it to be originally and stuff like that.
And he's local too, right?
I don't know.
I think so, because he does a lot of the local shows.
Oh,
I think he's even going to be at the Big Apple Comic Con.
Oh, cool. That's a nice
show.
In
New York. So, yeah. That's cool. I'm glad, because I was listening to Liefeld's podcast, Robservation.
Yes.
And there was a Dan Didio blacklist conversation that was going on. And Larry Hama was on that list for some reason, which was really weird. And Rob was just going off on a tangent that he's like, he should have never been on that list. He's like, royalty, he's been around. G.I. Joe wouldn't be anything without him.
Didn't Larry Hama, remember when DC was doing like those like six new titles? Sideways was one of them. The Immortal Men.
Right.
Wasn't Larry Hama writing one of those?
I don't think so.
Oh,
not
okay.
That I remember.
Because that was a Didio thing. So I can see how that.
I don't think he was on any of them. I think it was more of like the people that he was trying to bring up.
Yeah.
Up and coming kind of thing. But yeah. All right. We went off on a tangent. But yep, there's our bit of news. And we got Larry Hama in. So that's always a good thing.
Here we go.
It's wonderful. All right, guys. If you like what you heard, pacing was fascinating, right? 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Then subscribe to the podcast. We'll be here every week giving our 2 cents on whatever comes out and whatever news comes out. If you're a creator and want to be on a podcast, want to promote yourself and or project you have coming up, amazingactioncomics.com/podcast. Fill out the form. John and I would love to have you on. And yeah, have a chat. Stay up to date on everything that we got going on at AmazingActionComics.com. Don't forget to support your local comic book shop. They need you guys every single week so that we can keep doing what we love to do, which is 1, read comics, 2, talk about comics. John, where do you get your comics from?
Well, I get my comics at The Joker's Child in Fairlawn, New Jersey. And boy, besides comics, we've got toys, statues, we got supplies, we got your white regular boxes, we got your long boxes, we even got really cool graphic boxes too. So if you want to display all of your Venom comics in a box with Venom on it, we got it. Come on down to The Joker's Child in Fairlawn, New Jersey. We'll hook you up.
That was completely random with Venom. I would have said, listen, we have all your Larry Hama needs. We got all these issues of G.I. Joe. Just come on down and get them. So it's all good.
We have
all
a right, box yeah. with Larry Hama's face on it.
I could draw it on there. That'd be fantastic. That would be fucking cool. all right, kiddies. That's all that we have for you this week. It is 9:30 in the morning. And guess who's getting ready to go to bed? This guy. So until next week, please be amazing. Stay amazing. And read something amazing.